Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard from FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting, along with Trevor Sikkema of PewterReport.com, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We are continuing a series that we've been doing this week and last week, that where we look at the second year for a lot of key players around the NFL, players who were 2017 rookies who now have a little bit of experience. They go into that second season. They look forward to living up to expectations, perhaps more in some cases than they did as rookies. And that's obviously going to be key for all of these teams. The Steelers, though, we're talking about the AFC North today, Trev. And the Steelers, you look at that draft and you're like, you know, TJ Watt, Juju Smith-Schuster with your first two picks. You know, nobody else after that really did anything as rookies, but that's fine. I mean, you know, they got pretty good return in year one off of their two rookies. Seven sacks for Watt, and he was a good player all around. And Smith-Schuster was arguably the best rookie wide receiver in the class based off what year one, and looks like big things in store for that class. And the Steelers haven't been a team that hit on all their picks in recent years, or even most of their picks in recent years. So this class could be one that really helps them get to that next level as they're trying to overcome New England and get to another Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Steelers, they led the league in sacks last year, didn't they?
Oddly enough, they did.
Yeah, didn't they have like 56?
Yeah, Cam Hayward had a monster season.
It was crazy. So, I mean,
ended up with two more than Jacksonville.
Yes, like, I mean, TJ Watt, much bigger role, a part of the, I mean, the number one sack in a defensive line in football. So, I mean, like, that's obviously huge when we talk about hitting on your first round pick and not just hitting on him long term, but hitting on him like right away. Mm-hmm. I think it's a big deal for TJ Watt because, I mean, even if guys go through sophomore slumps, it's still great to see them have a lot of production in their first year. So, like, even if Watt maybe cools down from what he did last year, maybe he'll even elevate and the pick looks even better and better. But whatever it is, you know, when you have that first year and it's almost solidified in that way, mm-hmm. that kind of is the telltale sign right there that you kind of nailed the first round pick, and it's kind of up to you, I guess, to be able to get the most out of the next couple years after that.
It certainly looks good now. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, like, seven sacks, I think almost all of them were hustle sacks. He was in coverage, I think, on two of them. I mean, so he, like, that number is definitely deceiving. He was not beating guys 1v1 on a regular basis. If you're a first-round edge rusher, you better be beating what guys 1v1 on a regular basis.
That's okay, you know, like, especially if you're taking a guy 30th overall, right?
It's okay, but it's not sustainable. What's sustainable is winning 1v1. I don't know that, you know.
Yeah, but how many guys in the NFL really can win 1v1?
Oh, all the best.
I know.
The guys who will up the first round.
I'm not like trying to take it away in that regard, but I'm saying, like, if you're taking a guy 30th overall, it's hard to think that he's going to be like a monster one-on-one in his first year, I guess what I'm saying.
And that's why I'm saying, like, it's a good first year, but if he doesn't build on that and get better, you know, if this is all that Watt ever is, which I don't think it will be, it's going to be disappointing. But I think if he continues to get better and improve as a 1v1 rusher and be able to win in those situations and provide that type of pass rush, because, you can't really count on, you know, the Steelers played, and this has been widely discussed, one of the biggest reasons the Steelers led the league in sacks, and this isn't to disparage them because Hayward did have a great year, but they don't really have a great individual pass rusher outside of Hayward, and he's an interior guy. You don't normally see him get, what do you have, like 12 sacks or something? You don't normally see that for an interior guy, and so, you know, the thing that really helped the Steelers, if we're just being straight up honest, and I know I'm a Steelers guy, so Steelers fans are probably going to get mad at me, but they faced like the worst quarterbacks in the league this year, and they just churned out sacks against those teams. You know, I mean, they had like, I think they had like 14 sacks in the two games against the Browns and against the Texans. Against the Texans, their nickel corner had 3 sacks. Mike Hilton, 3 sacks.
Not great.
So, I mean, like, yeah, and they were playing like their third and literally a quarterback they signed off the street got in for a quarter in that game. These guys have no idea what they're doing. And then all those offensive lines were bad at that point. So it just was a mess in terms of what they were playing. And they churned out sacks against those teams. I think like half of their sacks came in those two games, basically. You know, remember those three or four games. So, you know, it was just it was kind of a deceiving number because there would be large stretches of games where they wouldn't get any pressure at all. But having said that, I think that it's very important. You remember the great Steelers defenses? What was something they always had? Greg Lloyd, Jason Gilden, James Harrison. Yes, grit. Joey Porter. They always had a pass rusher who could win 1v1 on long and late downs. They didn't have to scheme for it. They didn't have to blitz for it. And that's where the Steelers get a lot of their pressure right now, is by doing those things, because they don't have those great 1v1 rushers. So yes, it shows up and it gets them those splash plays at times. It also hurts them a lot of time because they have to do things like that in order to get pressure. So being able to nail one of these edge rusher picks that they've had after, I mean, Dupree looks like a bust. Jarvis Jones has been a bust. They got to be able to nail one of these. They need Watt to be a double-digit sack guy, and they need him to be able to do it consistently. And he has the athleticism. He has the size, the athleticism.
People throw around that double-digit sack term, and let me tell you, boy, from somebody who has not watched a Buccaneer get double-digit sacks since Simeon Rice in 2006.
Gerald hasn't done it?
No.
He's an eight-sack guy. Yeah. Well, interior guys would be different, too. I mean, you're hitting eight sacks as an interior guy. You're a stud.
Yeah, I think Gerald gets anywhere from, like, 6 to 9. Let me look. Let me make sure. Because I know that's true for edge rushers, but it might be true for – I think it's true for all interior linemen in general. But
I think you're right. He might have had a 9-sacker in there, but
he's never had double-digit sacks, but he had – like, starting in 2013, which was his third year in the league – he went 9.5, 8.5, 8.5, 7.
That's pretty solid. That's awesome.
Yeah. McCoy's really good. He's really freaking good. But
yeah.
The Bucs, have not had a double-digit sack guy since Simeon Rice.
Hmm.
And last year was hilarious because as the Bucs were like struggling and having the worst defensive line in the NFL, Simeon Rice literally was like tweeting out, "Hey, sign me."
Right. And he still looks like a god, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Tank. He's like T.O., dude.
Right. Never get old. Anyway, Juju was the real story, right? Was there a more liked, except in Cincinnati, rookie in the NFL than Juju Smith-Schuster?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, both for his play on the field and for the antics, you know, the end zone stuff, the Twitter stuff. He's just a funny
Juju
dude.
He's still doing it today. Like, he is doing such a wonderful job of truly, like, setting up a brand for himself. And you and I
knew you would talk about this. I knew you would respect this.
Because it's so awesome what he is doing, because he is taking his moment in the spotlight in football and is using it to build up a identity and a brand of, like, who he is, just himself. And that is, man, rookies – like, they got to take note from Juju. Not only, like, how well he did his first year on the field, but you're not going to play football forever. But if you, in today's age, if you can set up yourself as, like, this, as a brand, the way that Juju Smith-Schuster does on Twitter and on Twitch and on YouTube and just as, like, this personality, you may not play football forever, but you will always be you forever. And I think that's a really key thing to teach a lot of the athletes that are coming up in today's age, that even if, like, man, say Juju takes it, because how old is he? He's 21?
21, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, let's say that Juju takes a huge beating basically over the rest of his career, and at age, like, 27, 28, dude's got multiple injuries, whatever, and just goes, man, I'm kind of done with football. I'm kind of done getting beat up. You know, he's 27, 28, and a lot of us would look at it and be like, yo, you got so much less in the tank. You got so much money left to, like, to make and blah, blah, blah. But, like, the way that he's going right now, establishing himself off the field, he can retire whenever he wants, and he can still live a great life and an entertaining life. He can still stay in that spotlight in such regard. So I know that's, like, totally, like, off topic of how he's done on the field or even how we analyze how he's been with the Steelers. But
I knew you would love it. I knew you would appreciate it.
He is just so much – yeah, he's so much setting the tone for the next generation of football players to be people that can continue to be in the spotlight and set up an identity for themselves and live a great life after football. He's doing such a great job of that, of marketing himself. And
I'm really, really excited. Cool to see. I don't know about you, but I'm super excited for all the people who thought, oh, it's endearing in year one. You know, all those people to turn around and be like, he needs to focus on football.
Oh, my God. No. They're going to – can't wait. Don't get me wrong. The second he has a down year, they're going to turn on him so quick.
Yeah. Second,
they're
going
to turn on him so quick.
All he has to do is drop one key pass in a game and everybody's going to lose.
Oh, can't wait.
Pittsburgh fans are very reactionary. But having said that, Juju was I think people will mention the name of Cooper Kupp, but as rookies, I mean, what Juju did per catch, 58 grabs, 917 yards, 7 touchdowns. Yeah. I mean, I think we can say that and not anger too many people that Juju was the best rookie. Now, do you think Juju will end up being the best rookie wide receiver from this class? Or do you think Corey Davis or Mike Williams, John Ross, somebody like that ends up, you know, reaching their potential? I mean, obviously we've got a lot of football left to play, but
John Ross, LOL.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that today too.
Oh yeah, we do get to talk about that today. Yeah. I would say it's either going to be Juju or Corey Davis.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's my thoughts there.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I love Mike Williams. And, you know, I thought I liked Juju. I had an early third. Right, I think he was literally 63rd or 62nd or something on my board, like right where the Steelers took him. No, he was higher than that, actually. I take it back. He was higher pick-wise, but he was early third-round grade for me because I didn't have 64 round one through two grades. So I thought
yeah,
I liked
him. Yeah, people
always
get confused with that.
I thought I liked him, but I will say this. He was somewhat raw and went to Pittsburgh, which is the best place in the world for a wide receiver to go. Learn from one of the best wide receiver coaches ever, Richard Mann. Worked with AB diligently, and I watched him work with him. Put in that time. He did. Juju is a grinder. And got better faster, you know, because he is younger, got better faster than other people would have anticipated. A guy that was not close to reaching his peak, we kind of perceived him as not a great athlete, so didn't know what the ceiling would be there. But I think he's really a testament to how technical the wide receiver position is and why so many guys get in the league and fail and have failed in recent years. And that's been discussed widely, how many wide receivers have been bad. It's because they don't commit themselves and grow technically. And Juju did. He did those things.
Well, I think what people had reservations with Juju Smith-Schuster coming out of USC is that, like you were saying, the athleticism wasn't necessarily off the charts. So in his tape, he wasn't really separating well with athleticism. And that kind of worried you because obviously separation is such a big deal for wide receivers. But you can also separate technically. And he picked up on that, to your point. He picked up on that very quickly his rookie year, how to become a better separator, at least an early on phase better separator in his rookie year. And, I mean, you saw the production cause of it.
Yeah, for sure.
How's Cam Sutton doing? Okay,
well, yo, he was pretty solid as a rookie. He got toasted deep by AJ Green once. It happens to the best of us. Other than that, he played really solid as a rookie. He didn't play a ton, though. This will be an interesting year because their starting corners are obviously still in place across the board. Hilton's going to play in the slot. But if Hilton falls off or if Artie Burns continues to struggle with basic assignments, there were times when Burns was playing second team in practice last year, but then he would end up starting the games. And you know, if he continues not to make strides, I think Sutton's going to be allowed to really push him in camp, push him in the preseason, and we'll see what happens. I don't think they want to move away from Artie, but Hayden played well last year, and I don't think he's likely to give up his spot. And they like Sutton. Tomlin's really not hid the fact that he likes Sutton. So Steelers are kind of four deep at corner, but nobody's great. So it's kind of weird. Like I'm not used to them being deep at corner, but none of these guys are really that good either. So, and none of them create turnovers, which is a bummer. Because really, when your secondary is this bad, you need a guy who's going to create turnovers. So it's just kind of, I don't know where exactly Sutton checks in. And also he could be a nickel guy. He played some safety at the Senior Bowl. Remember, the Steelers have talked about him in that role too. So I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen with him. But he's a guy they want to try and get on the field if possible. So it'll be fun to watch him. You know, Connor comes back. He's going to be the backup, obviously splitting time with Jalen Samuels, probably behind Le'Veon Bell. Not sure it really matters after that. Dobbs going to try and hang on to a roster spot. We'll see if he can do it. You know, Bell's going to play almost every snap this season. This is his last year in Pittsburgh. They're going to use him for everything they can. It's just going to be the way that it is.
Yep.
All right. The Browns need some wins, huh? Do the Browns need some wins or do they need some wins? Both on the field and in the war room. Three first-round picks. What's your takeaways from their three first-round picks from last year?
I mean, I love them.
You loved the Peppers pick.
I like Peppers, man. I think the Peppers...
Oh, I forgot you did. You thought he was Big Nickel Hive.
I did. And so, like, you know, they're not really using him this way. So, and I don't mean that as like, oh, thank God, now I have a cop-out for saying Peppers is good.
But yeah, they're using him in the worst role possible for him.
So. Right. We're going to play him 80 yards back. And you know what? Nobody's going to score on us. Checkmate. Okay,
that
they
is,
just completed.
Changing this year, though. I don't know if you heard that.
Okay, thank God. No, but I thought that we were idiots for bringing that up last year. Oh, okay, wait, never mind. I thought that Jabril Peppers was best when he could obviously use his athleticism, right? I mean, this is a compact guy who's got a lot of strength, has a lot of athleticism in him. And to me, that screams that that's a guy who can play man responsibilities. And I thought that as a big nickel, kind of like you said there, like almost like a big nickel player where he could come up, play physical against tight ends, get in the face of slot receivers. I thought that that was his best role as a nickel corner. Now, how high do you take that? I don't really know, because I don't know how they were going to use him on the other end of things. I didn't know if they were going to take that athleticism and use it also in like some single high roles, or if they were just going to use him in that, because then it's like, how high do you take a nickel guy, even though I think he could be one of the better ones. So I believed in a lot of the potential of what Jabril Peppers could be as a mismatch neutralizer, which I think is a really big deal in today's football, because yeah, you're seeing a lot more teams emphasize all that kinds of stuff. On the offensive side, on the flip side, I'm, you know, just trying to create any mismatches they can. And I looked at Jabril Peppers and thought this could be an elite piece as a mismatch neutralizer.
Okay. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
What do you see as the major differences? And maybe you don't see any. I don't know where you'd rank these guys if you put them all together. Because you talked about Peppers' role, and it sounds very similar to the roles that we talked about for guys like Minkah Fitzpatrick, Derwin James, Justin Reed in this past year's draft, all of whom I know you like to a good degree.
Right.
What is the big difference there, and where would you rank Peppers compared to those guys?
I think that Minkah Fitzpatrick would be my top guy just because he has such a knack for also taking the ball away. And like you said earlier, like you just said right before, taking the ball away is a big deal. It's not just like by chance or like, oh, you know, like it's an added bonus. No, like taking the ball away is a big deal. And so Minkah would be number one there. And I like, where did Minkah get picked? What pick was it? It was like in the teens,
11.
Wasn't it?
11.
Oh, no, it was 11. Okay. So, I mean, I was comfortable taking Minkah anywhere from like 10 to 20. I guess like 10 through 12 is kind of still a little bit high for me, but I was okay with it there. And then Peppers, I thought I was fine going from like 15 to 20.
So would you take Peppers over Derwin?
No.
I don't even think it's close, man. Like, to me, Peppers played in man coverage and was average at best on tape. And what, he didn't play it a ton. Derwin was shut down, locked down.
I have such a hard time like hampering on what college guys can be, especially in a stupid system where they basically know you're like a – it's basically you're playing a –
Ron Brown's system is not stupid.
How did they use Peppers in like 9 different positions?
Because he wasn't good. They played him as like a big nickel or a pseudo linebacker most of the time.
But
he wasn't good deep.
I will always have my doubts because I know what goes on with college football and recruiting and coaching and how it's a recruiting business first. That
you
I just will always
offense.
Have my doubts about coaching.
You
maybe. Okay. Maybe.
I
don't know.
I think he would have been good at running back. I really do.
And Jordan Whitehead should have played running back.
Yeah, probably. Maybe. My big thing with Peppers is this. I don't think he's nearly as sticky in man coverage as Derwin James is, and I don't think he has the ball skills.
Right. I wouldn't have picked Derwin. No, I would have picked I would have picked Derwin first. Anyway. Like Derwin, I would have picked Derwin over Minkah.
He just didn't make an impact was my biggest thing about Peppers. He wasn't really that instinctive of a run defender either. There were times where he would fly up on the perimeter and beat a wide receiver block and make a play.
I would have gone
a lot
Derwin,
of times where he couldn't get off a wide receiver block.
I would have gone Derwin, Minkah, Jabril.
What about
and
Justin?
Then, like,
what about Justin Reed?
I'd have picked Reed after Jabril.
Cannot relate. Cannot relate. But I'm anxious to see how Peppers does in a better role. You know, yes, it would be easy for me to like say, you know, I was right on Peppers after he sucked last year, but again, he was in a position that was bad for him. Now, he also was playing way too deep. Now, would it have mattered? I don't think I think that does speak some ways to like his, like, there are not a lot of ways Peppers can help you, and there are a lot of ways those other three guys we talked about can help you, and I think Peppers needs a very specific role. So we'll see. He did test really well.
I agree, but I think the role could be big.
Could be important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it could be, but I don't think he's going to be as good at it as Minkah or those guys.
If Peppers can pick it up mentally, then I think you're talking about a really key piece taking away certain teams' mismatches.
Yeah, and he's got to
get
there
technically. That's why I see Peppers.
Like, Derwin was just so clean technically, like, in man coverage. And I just never saw that from Peppers. But we'll see. Year two is a big year for him. The role's changing, and now he's where he's supposed to be more comfortable. So we'll really be able to evaluate him, I think. They obviously need him to be huge. They need Njoku to be huge, and I thought he flashed a ton as a rookie. 32 catches, 386 yards, 4 touchdowns, some really eye-popping catches. There were some inconsistencies. Sure, you're going to get that. You knew that. Njoku was young. He was a little bit raw. Raw as a blocker. But, man, he looks special at times. If he stays healthy, I just think he's going to be one of the best tight ends in the league. Now, you can argue whether the Browns in their situation should have taken a tight end, but it was their third first-round pick. So
Yeah.
I think you're understanding a little bit more. How about what happened with Kizer? Is it all Hugh Jackson and blame Hugh Jackson? Or is Kizer, should he bear some of the blame for this? Because I tend to think, as much as we rip Hugh Jackson, and I'm all on board that train, but I do think Kizer's got to shoulder some blame, man. He was not good. He threw 22 picks. He was careless in key situations around the red zone. He held the ball too long and took too many sacks. Yes, would he have been better in another situation? Sure. Would it have mattered for him in terms of his career and whether he could live up to expectations? I mean, there's a reason he fell to 52, I think, and I think teams were right. And a lot of people were saying he should be a top 10 pick. You and I were not those people.
No.
I think they're wrong. I think it's fair to say they're wrong, and I rarely say year one you can call it. I think it's safe to say they were wrong about him as a top 10 pick. Can he be better than he showed last year? Absolutely. Can he be that franchise caliber type quarterback? People had him as the best quarterback in the class.
Anytime you mentally ruin a guy, it's not good.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I mean, that's
He went from one bad mental situation to the other, playing for Notre Dame and Brian Kelly and then Hugh Jackson and Cleveland.
I think it's
you just can't do that with a QB.
Right. I think that's fair to say. I also think it's fair to say Kizer was probably more susceptible in his makeup than a guy like Deshaun Watson to that kind of situation.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you got to know what works for your guys before you draft them and how to handle them. But anyway, Kizer's not a story really anymore going into, which, you know, man, if you said that, that'd been kind of crazy. Kizer's not even a storyline going into his second season. Ogunjobi is, though, right? I mean, this is a guy that the Browns, look at their defensive line. Pull up the Browns defensive line on our lads. Okay. And tell me with one word what's your first reaction to the group of names that you see there is. And if you like Larry Ogunjobi, what's your reaction outside of his name?
Wow, what? this is the Browns D-line?
Yeah, bro. It's brutal. Wow. They don't have anything. They are counting on Ogunjobi to play tons of snaps.
I thought it was better than this.
No. They trade away Danny Shelton. It's like, what, Trevon Coley, Jamie Meter, Ogunjobi, and Brantley?
Jamie Meter.
Is Meter still there?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I mean, like, you have no pass rushers there. You hope Brantley develops and Ogunjobi is your future. They really think Ogunjobi is going to be a stud. They didn't even draft a guy there. So
they got some edge, though.
Oh, yeah. And they're going to play Nassib inside occasionally, I think. And they'll do some different things. But in terms of run stuffers, remember, the Browns were one of the best run defenses in the league last season. People forget. Also curious to see what Howard Wilson does. A lot of people liked him. He's a fourth-round pick.
Oh, the Browns signed E.J. Gaines? Okay.
Yeah. So that corner position's still up in the air, so Wilson's going to have a chance to show what he can do a little bit. All right, I know you want to talk about it, so I'll give you the floor. John Ross, one of your favorite topics to shred on here on the podcast, and I do agree with you. John Ross, going number 9 overall to Cincinnati.
It was bad. It was a bad pick then. It's a bad pick now. It's going to be a bad pick in 1 year. It's going to be a bad pick in 3 years. It's going to be a bad pick in 10 years.
What would Ross have to do to get you to recant those words?
Have a bionic leg. 2 bionic legs.
Yeah, small receiver with bad knees that only does one thing really well.
The Cincinnati Bengals drafted a small, compact receiver who only wins with his speed and who's already had major surgery on both of his knees before the day he got drafted. Yep. You're out of your mind.
I would have taken him in the second round. I said that pre-draft. People hated on me. They were like, this is the fastest dude ever to play wide receiver. You're crazy. I was like, I'll take him in the second round.
But I don't know if I would have drafted John Ross at all.
Given the fact that he was going to go in the top 15, it seems like, or at least the top 20, I would agree with you. Because given the fact that he was going, I would not have drafted him there, which basically means he would have been off my board compared to where other teams would have had him. He just wasn't that good. But speed always will get NFL teams to bite. I mean, always.
The bad NFL teams to bite, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Darius Hayward Bay, Ted Ginn, Tavon Austin. Will Fuller, we'll see. We'll see. We're holding out hope. But again, hasn't lived up to what he was, the second receiver taken in that draft. Corey Coleman, he's pretty fast. A lot of those guys, man, fast, athletic, but we say it over and over and over and over and over again. It's one of the reasons why I think Corey Davis will be a stud.
Here's John Ross's injury history before he even got drafted.
Go for it.
2014, knee meniscus tear. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Had two meniscus tears in his right knee.
Oh, boy.
2015, another knee meniscus tear. Re-injured the same knee, the right knee that he already had surgically repaired. He also had an ACL tear in that same knee.
Jeez.
Then in 2016, aggravated another injury that he had on his shoulder labrum tear. So the guy
shoulder was the big injury going into the pre-draft process.
Right. And then in December, again, shoulder, like a labrum tear. Right. Another one.
Yeah. And they tried to move him to defensive back in practice. Which, like, that's on your coaches. You don't take a guy number 9 overall and then try and move him to DB in practices in his first season.
You do if you know he's bad.
No, you don't. He's not that
bad.
No,
I'm kidding.
Either.
Yeah, you definitely don't do that. That's just shows how terrible. But I mean, like, that goes into the narrative of how terrible the pick it was, right, and why the Bengals did it. Because they don't know what they're doing.
Right. No plan. Now,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I would not have picked John Ross, like, at all. He wouldn't have been on my draft board. Now, people are going to be like, you're telling me that if he was there in the 6th round. Okay, like, yeah, but.
Right. When you say he's not on your draft board, you mean
the dude
relative.
Would not have been on my draft board.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have. And they picked him 9 overall. You're out of your mind.
Yeah. How about the Joe Mixon pick? He didn't do much as a rookie. We'll see. I was really high on Mixon as a talent.
Mixon, yeah.
That offensive line was arguably worse in the league, and so was their run scheme in general.
And so was him punching the lights out of that girl.
Right.
And so, like, Joe Mixon, Joe Mixon was, who knows, like, it was kind of all over for people because of that.
Bengals pick.
And I think talent-wise, I had Joe Mixon up there with Dalvin Cook, but I can't sit here and say that I would have even drafted Joe Mixon, another player that I don't even know if I would have drafted. Now, nothing has happened with him over the year, and I truly hope that he never gets in trouble for the rest of his career. Obviously, I hope that he's a better person for the rest of his life. Right. But yeah, football is it's earned, certainly, but it's also a privilege in this instance. Yeah. And so I was very, very, very on the fence of what to do with Joe Mixon, because this is a part of our job with scouting that's tough, because we do not get to sit down with these people. Like, right. We do not get to have conversation with them. We do not get to know them at all. And I know there were a lot of people who were like, I'm not drafting Joe Mixon. You know what? I don't blame him. I don't know if I would have either.
Right.
But in terms of the talent, he was right there with Dalvin Cook for me.
Yeah, I agree. They were the top two backs in the class, I think. We'll see what year two brings. I am very curious. Rationalize this for me, okay? Jordan Willis, drafted at 73rd overall. Carl Lawson, 116 overall. Talk to me.
Did not think that Jordan Willis would have that kind of production in his first year.
You mean Lawson. Willis didn't have any production.
Right. What did I say?
You said Willis, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then Carl Lawson ended up going after Jordan Willis, which I also did not think was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Lawson played 477 snaps as a rookie. Willis played 360. Obviously, sacks are not everything. But
how were people scared of Carl Lawson?
Because of the injuries, I guess. But there was no talk about Lawson. His injuries going up. You know, like, during the process, we talked about Ross's knees, his shoulder, like, all that stuff was a big topic of conversation. Like, Lawson's injuries were in the past. He had played a fully healthy season. Then no issues were presented to the public. Nothing has ever still been released about Lawson and teams being scared about his injuries during the pre-draft process. That stuff almost always gets out. I think teams thought he wasn't that athletic. wasn't that long of a guy. He had short arms. I know that took him off like teams like the Cowboys board. Don't you think they wish he had Lawson instead of Taco right now?
Yeah.
And we'll see. It's only 1 year, but 8.5 sacks as a rookie for Lawson while he was playing 460 snaps. I mean, like, this dude has double-digit sack potential, and he knows what he's doing. Yeah, he's good. No doubt. And he's going to make that draft class, really. I mean, he's going to make it okay. He and Mixon have the best potential moving forward. I think Willis is going to be just a guy. He'll have some 4 to 5 sack years. You know, he might help you, you know, as a run defender here and there. But, I mean, people were talking about Willis going first round, remember? Because he had that unreal combine that will constantly make me question everything that I know about life. It's incredible.
What was more shocking, Willis's combine or Gesicki's combine?
Willis, because at least I knew Gesicki was fast. I didn't think Gesicki would run those cones.
Yeah, but Gesicki's literally like the greatest athlete of all time.
Willis just played like one of the worst athletes.
Dolphins tweeted out the picture of like the Gesicki had signed his rookie contract, whatever. And it's just like a picture of him with the paper and the pen and just his big goofy smile and this kind of like messed up blonde hair. And I'm like, that guy right there is the greatest athlete in the world. And I don't know what to do with it.
yeah, that was, you're right. That was pretty amazing just because of the percentiles that he tested in. But Willis blew away Jadeveon Clowney's workout. It wasn't even close. And people forget that Clowney did not have great cones and shuttles, which are huge for edge rushers. People just throw that out because the 40 and the explosive numbers were so good. It's kind of like what we did with Barkley, to be honest. Barkley had like a terrible 20-yard shuttle, but their other numbers in the tape impresses so much, we don't even talk about the fact that Barkley's agilities were below average.
You know, some of us talk about it. But right,
well, yeah, that's true.
Locked On NFL Draft Podcast.
Again, Willis just like never looked like that on tape. So yeah. They really haven't gotten anything else out of the rest of their class. Let's talk about the Ravens to wrap up the show.
Okay.
I got to give a shout out to my boy Marlon Humphrey because I said going up to draft, I'm most scared of the guys I had first round grades on. I'm most scared about Marlon Humphrey because there are some ups and downs on tape, but this guy was a starter as a true freshman for Nick Saban.
I think it's a big deal. Freshman.
Yeah. For Nick Saban and that defense. It's as complicated as it is, and he never backed down from anyone. He had all the physical and athletic gifts you want. Mentally, he had the experience. He was obviously smart enough to handle a lot of what they did. Yes, he had to improve some of his decision-making as a corner. Yes, he had to improve some things technically in press man. He was really good for Baltimore as a rookie. And when Jimmy Smith got hurt, he stepped up in a huge way over the end of the season and was really strong. I think that'll continue for him.
I like this. This class was very Ravens.
Yes,
right?
Because they drafted all defense, but at what point, like, Bowser and Williams couldn't get on the field over Judon and Za'Darius Smith.
That's a big concern
moving forward. I think it's a huge year, too, for those guys.
Oh, man, I hope Tim Williams is good.
I know. You need that. Well, we both – I mean, I had him in the second round, so we both could use that. His team looks so good at times.
I know. Tim Williams flashes over the 2 years that he was really doing stuff at Alabama is just some of the freakiest pass rush stuff over that period of time.
He did have some dud games, too. He was a weird player, but.
Yeah. He had a lot of feast of famine stuff, but when he was feasting, man, and that's how I always, you know, I was looking at it in the sense that, like, with what the Eagles are doing and what, I mean, even what the Steelers are doing, like you said, like throwing different types of players at offensive lines all the time, just going after them with different kinds of pieces, having a scheme for pass rushing. And I thought that Tim Williams would be a really good piece, even if it's a rotational piece. You just get this guy off the field, and you just tell him to go.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted him to be in. And
from our perspective, we want Williams to work out, but the Ravens, they really need Bowser to be there. I mean, he's the 47th pick, and I'm sure they don't care which one, but that's the guy they really believed in. Williams was their fourth pick, you know, 78 overall. Obviously, they want to see him come along, but Bowser played the fourth most edge snaps, I think, last year. After it was Suggs, Judon, Za'Darius Smith, who didn't do anything, so I don't know how that happened, and then Bowser. And Bowser, you know, great athlete, no idea what he's doing as a pass rusher, really raw guy. It's going to be a big year, too, for him. Not totally dissimilar from Judon, except a better athlete. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with him moving forward. But it is, it's a huge season for him because they need somebody, you know, take some snaps off Suggs. That dude's going to be 36 this season. You got to like, and he played like 80% of their snaps last year or something. Like you got to ease that back for him, you know, let him come off the field some. So yeah, Baltimore, Humphrey looks like a stud. The rest of the class really got to step up. Nico Siragusa is going to have a chance to start. Wormley's got to get into that rotation. You know, Illuminor's going to have a chance to compete and maybe start. I mean, they need some guys on the offensive line to step up. I know they're fourth and fifth rounders, so that may not be totally fair, but those are the guys they really need to kind of step up to get this team back to where it once was. So, I don't know. There's your thoughts on the AFC North year two for a lot of these, for all these guys. These 2017 draft picks should be very, very interesting and a lot of fun to evaluate them moving forward. Well, we got one more. Got
yep.
The AFC West, right? Yeah.
West.
Broncos, Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders. Talking yep. about them tomorrow. Until then, keep it locked right here. Locked On NFL Draft.